Funniest, most piddling little families with only five or six children do with themselves.
They're instant priorities. You know you have to protect them and provide for them.
You've given me a massive headache. Teach
your children well. It doesn't take a village to raise a child. It takes an army.
The hospital made us take it home.
We'll look back on moments like these as the happiest in our lives.
It Takes a Parent with Betsy Hartz is brought to you by the Huntington Learning Center of Lake Villa, beautiful beginnings of Western Springs and Lincoln Park, and Day Out with Thomas at the Illinois Railway Museum. You can meet Betsy's sponsors at betsysblog.com.
Always seemed too good to be true. Park your infant in front of a video and in no time, he or she will be talking and getting smarter than the neighbor's kid. In the latest study on the effects of popular videos such as the Baby Einstein and Brainy Baby series, researchers find that these products may be doing more harm than good, and they may actually delay language development in toddlers. That, according to Time magazine this week. You know, I never understood the allure of the super baby. I mean, don't you remember all that hype? It's still going on. A lot of what was all the rage when my kids were babies, my oldest of four is 13 now, was music. Babies had to listen to music, particularly classical music, in order to build a better, stronger, more successful baby. Now, I like classical music, not as much as I like Rod Stewart classics, mind you, but well enough. But I never bought into the notion, prevalent throughout my four children's babyhood, that there was a small window of time to really shape a baby's brain. And boy, if you missed it, you were out of luck. And you had to flood that brain with Mozart or other classical music during those years because that was the only way to make a baby smarter. That understanding was based on research in the 1990s that just always seemed a little bit too easy to me. And sure enough, more and more of that research is now being debunked. In fact, a lot of that whole super baby nonsense is being debunked. Parents, are you listening? In fact, it's even been shown to be harmful. Why do parents push their kids, even their babies? Why do they push themselves so hard? Why are we never satisfied? And I'm at fault at this too. Where does this come from? And what brings us real satisfaction? Those are all questions we are looking at today. Friends, you are listening to It Takes a Parent with Betsy Hart here on AM 1160 WYLL Radio. You know, you can get links to the latest information on debunking the super baby myth on my blog, betsysblog.com. That's betsysblog.com. I hope you'll visit. And you'll also want to stay tuned because later in the show, we have a great giveaway we're doing on my website. You don't want to miss that. You know, we push our babies, we push ourselves. We always want bigger, better, brighter, smarter. Why? Because somehow we think that's going to bring us happiness. Now, I'm all for ambition and improvement and hard work. I think those can be very good things. And they're part of our human condition. They're what God calls us to do. But is there too much of a good thing? We'll be exploring that today with Greg Easterbrook, a scholar at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C., and author of the really terrific book, The Progress Paradox, How Life Gets Better While People Feel Worse. This is Betsy Hart on It Takes a Parent. And here on the show, you know, we like to say that while other folks talk about what's going on in the world, we like to talk about what's going on in your world, our own little worlds, our most important worlds, our homes and our families. This is a show where our ultimate goal for our kids is heaven, not Harvard. Though if they stop into Harvard on their way to heaven, that's a fine thing. And we hope we're raising the kind of kids who could do that place some good. Well, here's what the New York Times piece said, and this is what caught my eye this past Sunday, front page of the New York Times. By almost any definition, except his own and perhaps those of his neighbors here in Silicon Valley, Hal Steger has made it. Mr. Steger, 51, a self-described geek, has banked more than $2 million. The $1.3 million house he and his wife own on a bluff overlooking the Pacific Ocean, it's paid off. The couple's net worth of roughly $3.5 million places them in the top 2% of families in the United States. Yet, Each day, Mr. Steger continues to toil in what colleagues call the Silicon Valley salt mines, working as a marketing executive 12 hours a day and another 10 hours over the weekend. Silicon Valley is thick with those who might be called working class millionaires because many such accomplished and ambitious members of the digital elite still do not think of themselves as particularly fortunate. Why? Because they are surrounded by people with more wealth, often a lot more. Forget the rich and famous. These folks sound kind of rich and miserable. Greg Easterbrook, welcome to It Takes a Parent.
Hi, Betsy.
So glad to have you on the show today. You know, my mom always said, money can't buy happiness, although she often said that she would like to give it a try. Was she right?
Well, everyone's mother tells every child that money doesn't buy happiness. We all say that we believe that, but very few Americans behave as though they believe that. The psychological research shows that the huge increase in per capita income that's occurred in the post-war era, if you adjust for inflation, on the average United Americans now make three times as much as we made when World War II ended, has not been accompanied by any increase in happiness. Our levels of self-reported happiness are just the same as they were in 1950. And meanwhile, the rates of clinical depression are rising.
And now that is fascinating. And let's, you know, you open with this in your book, and I think you really set an incredible picture where you point out we have length of life, leisure time, food that's cheap and available. We have every reason to believe that our children who are born today are going to grow up strong and healthy. We have a life that, as you say, outside of, you know, I'm sure our ancestors would have been a little bit of appalled at perhaps the pace of it and so forth and some of the loose social mores and all that kind of thing. But something of a panacea. I mean, come on, you walk into a room, you flip a switch on and you've got light. Undreamed of historically. And yet we're more stressed out than ever. And you're saying our happiness levels have not increased since 1950, but our depression levels have. What is going on?
Because I think, Betsy, if you could, you would only have to go back a few generations, four or five generations to great-great-great-grandparents and describe the way we live today with unlimited food, houses that are warm in winter and cool in summer, very high education levels, high levels of personal freedom, freedom from most diseases and declining rates of all diseases.
Mm-hmm.
And our ancestors, just a few generations removed, will say, my God, that's utopia. And I really think they would use the word utopia to describe the way we live today. Now, hardly anyone who's alive today views the contemporary American life as utopian. We seem to show, as a society, relatively little gratitude for the things that we enjoy. And the things that we enjoy sure are not making us happy.
Well, you know, I mean, my mother, a font of all wisdom, used to say, you know, some people just are not happy unless they have something to be miserable about. Is that it? Are we always looking for the downside?
I think that's a big factor. In my book, The Progress Paradox, I spend a lot of time speculating on why rising living standards doesn't seem to make people any happier. And one reason.
And why? Tell me.
Well, there are many reasons. One reason, I think, is that unhappiness is a kind of default human condition because it's easier to reach. If you go looking for something to be upset about, you are sure to find something. There's no chance you'll be disappointed.
Yeah.
Whereas if you say to yourself, well, what I want to do is develop a philosophy of life and find a fulfilling role for myself and my community and my universe, that's a much more enriching and promising goal. But it might take you 10 years to do that, 20 years, and I can't guarantee you that you will succeed. So I think we tend to fixate on the things that are directly in front of our noses and ponder only the negatives rather than the positives.
Or as I say to my kids, you know, you're just looking for something to complain about. And often you're right, because that's so easily graspable. And I would argue we live in this fallen, broken world, and it's pretty easy to find the stuff that doesn't work. Sometimes you have to look a little bit harder to find the things to be grateful for. And that's something I know I try to teach my children. And every day is a little bit of a struggle with that. Now, you point out in your book something that is very counterintuitive to me, if not to most folks. And that is that you say, look, once your basic needs are met, which you can tell us what those are, but basically shelter, you know, decent home, maybe you have some money put away for your kids' college education, kind of your basic stuff, that once that happens, the connection between happiness and wealth are totally decoupled. In other words, you know, the person super wealthy is not really any intrinsically happier than the person whose basic needs are being met. That just, I have trouble believing that.
There's strong psychological evidence to support that point. obviously, people who are poor are unhappy about poverty. It's common sense. If you're worried about where your next meal will come from, who could expect someone like that to be happy? But at a fairly low level, and it's about $20,000 per year of income in the United States, and here our median income is about $50,000. Psychological data shows that happiness and money decouple and cease to have anything to do with each other. The Forbes 400, the richest 400 men and women in the country, have been studied. They are no happier than the population as a whole. I think probably there must be out there somewhere a billionaire who's made happy by his yacht and his private jet. But most of what we know about billionaires teaches us that they're not made happy by those things. They're made miserable by the pursuit of them. And when you think about it, it actually makes sense. And we don't think about this enough. Most of the things that really matter to us in life, love, family, honor, the sense of community, the sense that your life has purpose, you can't buy those things in a store. So,
as the Beatles pointed out, and you can't buy me love. That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. They were ahead of the track on that one. So then why are we so sure in the West that money buys happiness? Why do we keep living as if it does? Why is our entire economic and democratic system, which I'm all for, by the way, I'm a free market capitalist. I know that you're saying, look, these are great things. Let's have them. Let's have freedom. I'd much rather have it than not. But why do we think we're going to find our happiness there?
Well, there's nothing wrong with nice houses or nice cars. The only thing wrong with nice houses is that every single person in the world can't have one. Ideally, we'd all live in a nice house.
Mm-hmm.
But the mistake is to think that these things have something to do with happiness and to presume money for its own sake. I think that's the big mistake in American and European society, especially. And you see it in these, you know, the behavior of these sort of grotesque billionaires that exist in the country, that, you know, that literally have more money than they could spend in their entire lifetime, even if they did nothing but give it away.
Yeah.
But instead of giving money away, and I would submit that if you're wealthy, life's single most pleasurable act would be to give people money. They don't give it away. They spend all day trying to stab each other in the back to acquire more of what doesn't make them happy in the first place.
Yeah, and this isn't to say, I mean, we're not sort of beating up and saying you can't be rich and virtuous and happy. What you're saying is, if I hear you rightly, it's not your money that's going to bring you the happiness.
Right, exactly. And you do find some rich, virtuous people. I mean, you find occasional wonderful examples of these people we call deep givers who give away 90% or more of what they possess. And my bet is that those are some of the happiest people in the world.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, I'd like to have a shot at being one of them and being a deep giver. But, you know, I'm sure what you're going to say is, look, it's all relative. Wherever you are, you can find a way to give more fully, even if it's not your money, if it's your time, if it's something that allows you to give and help you maybe even to find gratitude in what you have along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you are listening to It Takes a Parent on AM 1160 WYLL, and you can get a podcast of the show anytime, as well as links to the things we are talking about on betsysblog.com. That's betsysblog.com. Okay, now, Greg, here's the thing. A lot of my listeners are going to say that, look, as Christians, we find our joy in our Christian life. So a lot of what you're saying isn't surprising. In fact, it kind of fits with what we know to be true about the human condition, because it's true, because heaven is forever, because it's something that's valuable, because it's truth itself. To what extent do you think that a dropping off in faith across the board in the United States and in the West, to what extent is that having an impact on those greater depression rates and those lack of budging, if you want to put it that way, on the rate of happiness?
Well, Betsy, as I was working on the progress paradox, one of the things that I constantly asked myself is, okay, living standards are way up in the post-war era. Everybody knows that, but happiness is not up. So what countervailing forces would tend to prevent happiness from rising, even though living standards were rising? And there are some, and clearly stress is one. Our lives are faster and noisier and more stressful than they used to be. But I think one of the key factors is the decline of belief in meaning in life. Surveys certainly show that fewer people in the United States today believe that life has meaning than believed this 50 years ago. One of the things that's happened in the post-war that's great is that an ever-rising percentage of people go to college, and going to college is great. I wish every single person in the world would go to college. But what do they teach you in college? They teach you that life is meaningless, that our existence is a random coincidence of amino acid exchange, etc. So at the same time that our prosperity has risen, we've lost a sense that there's higher purpose or meaning in our lives. And that's pretty depressing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think if I woke up every day sort of thinking this is all there is, I'm not sure why I'd want to keep getting up every day. And I think as a Christian, to find my joy in Christ and to say that matters, that's forever, that transforms everything else. And if as a country we're losing a sense of meaning, of belief, of a reason to live or to invest in forever, if you will, and a reason to bring our children up a certain way, I think that would be just really kind of a downer. Now, you talk in your book about Martin Seligman, who's really done some interesting things on, and from a secular perspective, but really interesting things that have a lot of truth, I think, wherever you are in your faith walk or not, about studying depression. And also, conversely, one of the few people who's focusing on what actually brings us happiness. But he looks at four things, I think he says, that have caused these increased depression rates. And it's not just better tracking and better reporting and less stigma. People really are more depressed, apparently, according to what you cite in your book, than they were 50 years ago. And can you talk a little bit about those points? Because I thought they made some really interesting observations on our culture.
Yeah, and Seligman is a professor of psychology at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia, and he has a book I'd commend to your listeners called Learned Optimism. Mm-hmm. The point of this book is that it's not just some weird coincidence that some people are optimistic and have a happy experience in life. They learn how to do it. And the book says, here's how to do it. But anyway, his Seligman's four big points about the rise in depression are that one cause is increased individualism. Mm-hmm. You can't argue against freedom. Everybody's in favor of freedom, including me. But if your outlook on life is individualistic, if you judge everything based on yourself, small setbacks in your own life will have huge importance and thus be a cause of unhappiness. Whereas mm-hmm. if you're intimately involved with a community or church or synagogue or any other larger organization, you'll still have setbacks. Everybody does. But they will be smaller in comparison to the community that you're involved with.
Okay.
That's his first point. His second point is that he and a lot of psychologists I know think that the self-esteem movement has totally backfired.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. I mean, self-esteem that's taught in public schools today, including the wonderful public schools that my kids go to, tells you that you're always supposed to feel good about yourself all of the time. And if you don't feel really good about yourself, somebody's got to be to blame for that and you should be mad.
Okay. And something's wrong with you. If you don't feel good about yourself in the moment, well, then something's wrong with you.
And something's wrong,
yep.
Right.
Okay.
And this is a totally unrealistic assumption.
Okay,
all human beings have bad days or get bored or have setbacks. And it's ridiculous to think you're going to feel good about yourself all the time.
So what's three and four?
Three is the victimization movement that you kind of alluded to earlier. The media and the legal system encourage people to think of themselves as victims today, when arguably we have more freedom and more self-reliance than we've ever had before. And finally, of course, materialism is a big cause. If you think materialism will give you happiness, you're sure to be disappointed.
Well, I think those are great lessons for all of us. And so now we know for sure, friends and listeners, what you've probably known intuitively, and that is we can push our kids, we can push ourselves, and in certain contexts, that may be the right thing to do, but it's not going to be what brings us happiness. Greg Easterbrook, author of The Progress Paradox, thanks so much for joining us today on It Takes a Parent.
Sure,
really appreciate you having on your show. And we're going to put your book and all the links to the things we've been talking about on my website, betsysblog.com. That's betsysblog.com. Now, right after the break, I'm going to talk about where we really are called to find our joy. And I might not say exactly what you would predict. So stay tuned for that. And I'm also going to tell you how you might win a few hours of happiness, at least, when you win a family four-pack of free passes to the Thomas the Tank train ride and festivities at the Illinois Railway Museum next weekend. Peggy Roberts of Orland Park was our winner last week. Congratulations, Peggy. Two more families are going to be lucky this week, so come right back. I'll tell you how to do it. You are listening to It Takes a Parent on WYLL AM 1160. Podcast anytime on betsysblog.com. Don't go away.
When your child says,
"Why do I need to learn this?"
The truth is,
"I don't understand it."
When your child says,
"I don't like school."
The truth is,
"Everybody reads better than I do."
When your child says,
"Who cares about college?"
The truth is,
"I have bad grades."
Recognize the signs. Call Huntington Learning Center at 1-800-CAN-LEARN to help your child do better in school. The truth is, Huntington can help. Your child can learn. Call now, 1-800-CAN-LEARN.
Huntington Learning Center is now open in Lake Villa. Right now, get a $200 evaluation for your child for only $75. Find out if your child is on track or needs a little bit of help. The $75 evaluation is only valid at the Huntington Learning Center of Lake Villa. Call Karen at 847-395-6741 to make your appointment today. 847-395-6741. Huntington Learning Center of Lake Villa on the southwest corner of Deep Lake Road and Grass Lake Road in the Tower Lakes Crossing Strip Mall. 847-395-6741.
A new baby is on the way. A beautiful beginning for you and your family. You can't wait. But what will you need to prepare? Beautiful Beginnings. At Beautiful Beginnings, you'll find everything you need for your baby's nursery, from the fine furnishings to the beautiful art for the walls. When you walk into Beautiful Beginnings, you'll get the scent of a new baby right down to the smell. The owners and staff are experienced moms. They have 30 children between them, so the knowledge about babies and products in their store is priceless. Their designers will help you decorate and design your baby's nursery with all the things you'll need and many unique things you won't find anywhere else. Find out why people from all over the Chicagoland area shop Beautiful Beginnings. Visit Beautiful Beginnings today for the 40% off sale on spring-summer apparel. Fall apparel is arriving soon. Beautiful Beginnings in Western Springs and now open in Chicago in Lincoln Park or online at shopbeautifulbeginnings.com. That's shopbeautifulbeginnings.com. Beautiful Beginnings, celebrating babies since 1995.
All aboard!
It's time for a day out with Thomas the Train, the classic storybook engine that's chugging its way to the Illinois Railway Museum on August 17th, 18th, 19th, 25th, and 26th. Take the kids on a 20-minute ride with Thomas. Meet Sir Topham Hatt. Enjoy storytelling, live music, and much more. The Illinois Railway Museum is America's largest railway museum, a not-for-profit educational corporation located in Union, Illinois. Day out with Thomas tickets are on sale now and are limited, so hurry and reserve your tickets by going to IRM.org. That's IRM.org. For more information, call 1-800-BIG-RAIL. 1-800-BIG-RAIL. Day Out with Thomas is an exciting way for children and grown-ups to enter the world of Thomas and Friends. Kids ride aboard a train led by Thomas and have their pictures taken with Sir Topham Hatt. There's also a special viewing station for Thomas and Friends videos, story time, and temporary tattoos of the island of Sodor Friends. See Thomas the Train at Day Out with Thomas at the Illinois Railway Museum. Go to IRM.org for tickets.
Welcome back to It Takes a Parent with Betsy Hart here on AM 1160 WYLL. Well, I'm going to give you a chance to win just a little bit of happiness right now. You can go to my website, betsysblog.com, and the first two people to register a comment there and tell me that you and your family would like to win the Day Out with Thomas the Tank Engine set of tickets. That's four per family. It's a $60 value. I'm giving away two of those today. Just go to my website, betsysblog.com, and let me know you're one of the families who would like to win those tickets. And if you can't use them, think about somebody down the street or maybe at your church. You might be able to give them a little bit of happiness. Well, you know, as Christians, we have to know that joy, real, deep, abiding joy, comes from knowing Christ, not looking at our circumstances, which can change, but to the object of our faith, a God who never changes. But here's the thing. I think too often we Christians have as our goal still happiness in this world. We agree we won't find it in material things. We'll look for it in God and with his people. But we still have as our set point that somehow we're owed happiness. You know, I did a little Bible search, and I can only find happiness mentioned once in the entire New Testament. Now, don't quote me on that. You might have a different translation. Maybe you find it two or three times. I only found it once. And it's not a bad thing. It's just a byproduct of what we should be after. Our goal has to be, as Christians, to glorify God. And sometimes in this world, that doesn't produce the surface happiness I think so many of us Christians seek. Sometimes it's hard. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control. And God loves to give good gifts to his children. But I don't think those gifts are necessarily cars or houses or even great relationships in this world or even necessarily surface happiness, although that's lovely and that is a gift. And he may choose to give us any or all of those things. But I think the gifts he is talking about most of all is heaven breaking into our hearts here and now and giving us the real joy in the fruit of the Spirit. We're not even necessarily supposed to seek that fruit itself. It's by seeking the Spirit that we get the fruit. And there's real joy in giving us the fruit of the Spirit. And that, I fully agree, is a gift money can't buy. Well, you've been listening to It Takes a Parent. Thanks to our sponsors, Beautiful Beginnings, Fine Furnishings for Baby and Child Room in Lincoln Park and Western Springs, the Huntington Learning Center of Lake Villa, and the Illinois Railway Museum. You can visit our sponsors, win the tickets for the Thomas the Tank exhibit and all the festivities that go along with that. And you can find links and a podcast to all that we are talking about today. You can get it all at betsysblog.com. That is betsysblog.com. Until next week, do remember the words of Paul to the Philippians. And boy, does it fit with what we are talking about today. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good repute, if there's any virtue and if there's anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. Friends, have a great week, and we'll see you next Thursday.